Back Talk is an extension of the award-winning movie review show It's Movie Time, which airs on Fridays at 4:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, the podcast features additional content and banter with guests. Back Talk is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
How sweet that is. I'm John DeSando.
And I'm KG Klein.
And this is Back Talk. Ken, I know you're always bursting to start. So let me preface this by saying we are talking today about the work of the most, how shall we say, not prolific, but I'll bet he is.
Not prolific, but more has had more influence on pop culture than any director
and made
ever.
More money.
And his movies undoubtedly made more money.
Right. So Steven Spielberg, we bow in honor of a man who knows how to make good movies that appeal
to the audience. There is anyone in America whose lives have not been touched by Steven Spielberg in one way or another. Whether it is the ball rolling down on Indiana Jones or the E.T.'s fingertip and, you know, I'll be right here.
All right, so
we'll all have memories of Spielberg.
We'll talk about that later on in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we have Disclosure Day. And I'm wondering about your reaction to Disclosure Day.
Disclosure Day, John, is Spielberg's best movie since Ready Player One.
All right.
It is a wonderful, fun film. He's going back to his roots with this one. He's going back to Close Encounters, E.T. There's a lot of Minority Report in it, and there's also a lot of the influences that influenced those movies early on. The movies like the Disney films, Shaggy Dog and Herbie the Love Bug.
All right, start,
yeah.
Ken. God, I got to stop you, and let's do that later.
Okay.
Right now, there are people out there who don't give a hoot about your filmography of Steven Spielberg. What they want to know is this a movie I can go to and enjoy with my family?
Absolutely.
This
is a very, very enjoyable film. Spielberg really has gone back to the escapist fantasies that made his career.
And Close Encounters.
Yeah.
Preparation for this movie, and mm-hmm. I think it's a good preparation. I think there's a connection between the two. What's to offer us?
Well, Disclosure Day is a much darker movie than E.T., or even Close Encounters.
Close Encounters, right,
You could make an argument it might be a direct sequel to Close Encounters. There are elements in Disclosure Day that suggests it's within the same universe. But if it is, then that means that the universe of Close Encounters took a slightly dark political turn after the end of that movie. But what I love about this is Spielberg is staying true to his humanist roots. This is a story about characters, first and foremost. Characters caught in a very fantastical situation. And that's what he does so well.
It's about to scream, and you can in the screening that Wayne and I went to, and Audrey, because very few, if any, people there with us. So I could yell out, when does this thriller start to be an alien visitation movie? Because, honest, Ken, half of this could be a thriller for any movie. Very, very well done. But as far as it being connected in any deep way to alien visitation, it doesn't yet get going until then.
It sets up a more of a political thriller at the start.
Yep.
The politics of the time is the repression of any information about aliens. So in that way, it's more like X-Files. If you're a fan of X-Files, oh my gosh, you're going to love this movie.
Yep.
You're encountering the opponent. Now, Spielberg in E.T. and in Close Encounters, there was no real villains. The people from the government who were being overprotective of the aliens, but it would be a stretch to say that François Truffaut in Close Encounters was a villain, any more than the guy with the keys in E.T. was a villain.
Close Encounters, they're being chased.
They're being chased.
And basically the people who are chasing them are going to want them to get the heck out of there.
They
want
to protect the aliens, but that is not the case in this one. In this one, they are protecting the knowledge, the information of the existence of the aliens because they are afraid of a social collapse should the news get out. But the movie has this subplot that never develops about the world being on the verge of nuclear war. And so Spielberg plays this rather cliche subplot of just when the world's about to go to nuclear war, something tremendous has to happen to save us and pull us back from the edge. And I really wish he had done a little more with that because that's such a heavy topic. You really just can't give it lip service.
It's because he put such an emphasis on the very slick first part of that movie, which is the thriller that I talk about.
Mm-hmm.
It just lost his sense of wonder in that, and he was being very modern. This, I want to say that I'm praising him for this. This is where he's bringing it modern. Safety of information, the attempt to separate people who have minds of their own, who might challenge whatever the government is doing, has a lot of Trumpian feel to it.
Early Spielberg films did not focus on politics. There's no politics in Jaws or Close Encounters.
Right.
But there is in this, because Spielberg's matured. He's just this side of 80 years old, and he feels the weight of the change that he has seen in society and in politics. And he can't help but bring that in, even though that means that this film is never going to be like his early films.
But if you remember in Jaws, where the mayor has to close down the beach. That's the politics.
that was the very simplistic, almost Disney-level politics.
Oh, it was.
That was, you know, right out of the Boatniks. But the thing here is that Spielberg stays true to himself by portraying four very accessible and relatable characters. We've got this two couples. One couple is this weather woman, played very well by Emily Blunt.
Oh my God. She doesn't get a nomination.
She is fantastic in this movie. And then her boyfriend, who is the more down-to-earth realist that doesn't buy into what's going on. And then on the other hand, you have this agent working for this government agency who's stolen the information, the videos of the aliens, and his girlfriend, who I found fascinating, who is a nun, who decided not to take her vows and is now on the run with him. So that introduces the whole element of religion into this and faith in human beings. And I found her to be a fascinating character, even though I wish she had been developed a little bit more.
Well, they even had the nun in there for me.
Oh, the actual, the Mother Superior,
You're right. Yes. Which I always enjoy because they're stern and knowledgeable and don't challenge them. Mm-hmm. And she's looking with her glasses down like this and just assessing what's going on.
And Spielberg doesn't hesitate to bring religion into this. How does religion react to the idea of life outside the universe? And he does an excellent job of explaining that. I think he really pulled that part off.
And Colin Firth as a bad boy is a good one.
Is a very good choice.
Yeah, very good. He's cold, impersonal.
He's our villain.
Yeah.
He, much more than we had in most Spielberg movies. He's the one trying to stop them. And there is a lot of gun use in this, which is very unusual for Spielberg. Normally a Spielberg film, again, staying to his Disney kind of roots, he doesn't introduce guns. When he did the re-release of E.T., he CGI'd out the pistol that was on the key man's belt. But in this movie, you've got a lot of shots being fired, and thankfully not too many hitting.
This weekend I was up at their magic show in the Amish country in Berlin, and the show reintroduced a gun.
Oh,
and it
interesting.
Hadn't used a gun for a couple of years, and I thought, well, they were obeying the current trend to not to use guns. But just as you were talking about it now, I'm reminded of this. They brought that back somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if they're feeling comfortable, you know, taking that particular harsh side of our society, whereas Spielberg was representing the best.
Spielberg could have done this movie without the guns, so it's very interesting to see a Spielberg movie with this much use of firearms, because that's something that he usually doesn't incorporate into his movies.
Don't you think that's feeling the zeitgeist at this time, which certainly ruder than it was when Spielberg was in it?
This is definitely a heavier movie than Close Encounters.
Yeah.
There's a palpable weight to this movie that you didn't have with, say, Close Encounters or E.T. This movie takes off, but it never soars the way those movies did. There's a great scene in this movie where you have two invisible fire trucks blast out of a building past the bad guys and take off. But if this had been E.T., those fire trucks would have flown up into the air with a John Williams string section in the background playing da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
You're so right. And then take a smaller notion, the car going through the home.
Yeah.
Smashing through the home. That's pretty rough imagery. I thought it was a great shot.
There would have been a lot more, in an early Spielberg film, a lot more innocence to the story, and a lot more things flying through the air, and there would have been those great, great moments when the movie just soars and your heart just leaps as you're watching Elia across the sky, or you're watching the spaceship go off with When You Wish Upon a Star.
Ken, we need to close out a little bit our disclosure day so that we can get to more Spielberg. but you can't stop you from bringing him in as you did. However, it's movie time. Thoughts for the family.
It's a fine family film. Yes, there's a little bit more gun use than I would have liked, but it's Spielberg. It's science fiction. He's not going to offend anyone. It's a good time. And the man is about to turn 80, John, so you have to ask, how many more films are we going to get from him?
Like you would ask me how many more shows.
I would never ask you that. But Spielberg definitely, you know, we're on our final films with him. And it's so nice to see him going back to his roots and doing science fiction at least one more time.
Boy, he's showing no signs of aging, really. He's showing signs of maturity.
Maturing. I was just going to say that. Yeah. He's matured, but he's not showing signs of aging, other than the fact he's only making a movie about every 4 years.
And his maturity is evidenced by me with the number of possible contemporary allusions it can make to the contemporary situation in our society and our government and so on. They're all there. Subtly in his film that he, as you would say, in picking any number of films before this, he doesn't get political.
He didn't get political early on. There's nothing political in his films from the 70s
and
80s.
But there is in this.
But there is in this. And he has been political for a little while now. And I think he's at the point where the weight of the world and the nostalgia for better times is all weighing on him. And he has to make a statement.
Yeah. You mentioned
Ready Player One.
Ready Player One. And I'm remembering now, it was a curious film.
Set in Columbus, Ohio.
Yes.
Yes, set in the future in Columbus.
Were people's minds controlled or something?
Well, it's where they were all playing a visual game.
That's right.
And that game had a reward of the most profitable company ever created to whoever could solve the puzzles. Based on a really, really good book, too, by the way.
So somebody who became a trillionaire, I'll bet.
If you've not seen Ready Player One, you have not seen probably the best movie ever set in Columbus, Ohio. And I love that. I love all the pop culture references in that movie.
Yeah. Why don't we look at some more of his filmography?
We were about to talk about Spielberg's other movies.
Yeah, I have a list of movies.
Oh, good.
You're not going to like this because they're not alien-related.
Well, not everything Spielberg did has anything to do with aliens.
Thank you.
We just think it does.
And I'd like to point out some that people know immediately when you say it. If you say Schindler's List,
you're going to be talking about probably the greatest movie ever made. A movie that should be mandatory watching in schools.
And what's so good about Schindler's?
What's so good about Schindler's List is he tackles the subject of the Holocaust, but he does it in a very humanist way, not a political way. And if you're going to teach the Holocaust in school, you need to do it in a non-political way. You need to talk about the loss on a very humanistic scale. The best way to do that is Schindler's List, because it puts faces to the victims. You're not just talking about millions of people killed. You're giving those people identity.
And you're extending some of the philosophy of his alien visitation movies if you look at the Nazis as aliens. And if you consider that the control that they had.
I'm hesitant to do anything to twist Schindler's List.
Well,
because
it's
such a specific subject about such a horrific moment in human history.
But see, you're reluctant to, as I have been, to take Spielberg out of his comfort zone and say he's actually also talking about. And that's what I want to say.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant film that can be interpreted allegorically in different ways. And now what takes on very much weight for me is the idea of aliens who aren't from outer space, but who are right amongst us. And those are
the evil that's amongst us. The evil that is here, that we are capable of.
Yes, thank you.
Plus, that movie, I've got a comment, has two of the greatest performances in the history of motion pictures.
Ray Fiennes
and Liam Neeson. Both of them giving absolutely amazing performances.
Yeah. It's one that for mature kids, it's worth seeing, showing them.
It's not an easy film to watch by any stretch of the imagination, but it has to be seen.
Maybe more famous than Schindler's, that may be a foolish thing to say, but one where you get an immediate reaction, oh, I've heard about that. Saving Private Ryan
is one of the greatest World War II movies of all time. And the first thing I always say when we discuss Saving Private Ryan is that was the greatest steal of the Best Picture Award in history, because that movie was so much better than the entire rest of the field. And yet.
Including Gwyneth Paltrow in that.
Shakespeare in Love manages to
take. You're hurting me.
Oh, it was painful to watch that. Because Harvey Weinstein had so much influence.
That was the heyday of Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, when he would sit dead center in the front row at the Oscars with some beautiful little blonde next to him and steal these Oscars from much more deserving pictures.
Thank you.
I would just watch Saving Private Ryan the other day because it's now out on 4K and it's just a beautiful transfer. The opening scene of that is perhaps the greatest 30 minutes of action filmed.
You are right.
It is the only time I think they've gotten D-Day right.
And recently, Pressure. Yeah. And Pressure has steps away from trying to compete with that.
Well, you have to spend a lot of money to make a sequence like that. You have to have the sets. You have to have the layout. You have to have the enormous cast.
Yeah.
And Pressure pulled back because we've already seen it. We don't need to see it again. Spielberg has done it. Nobody else needs to ever do it again.
I think they smartly did that.
And Tom Hanks, oh my gosh, Tom Hanks, so remarkable in that movie as Captain Miller. And Matt Damon's, everybody's great in that movie, but Tom Hanks' character just steals that with the quiet moments, the little monologues.
Well, that's one of Spielberg's strengths, is working with actors and guiding them and letting them go.
And he knows how to find very relatable actors for their roles, people that we can really empathize with.
So what happened with The Fablemans?
The Fablemans was Spielberg attempting to tell Spielberg, to tell his own story, but in a fictional way.
Yeah.
And I think, like many directors who have tried to tell something very personal to them, it didn't quite work because it was too personal. It was too difficult to relate to. Miyazaki had the same problem with Boy and the Heron. Very personal story about him growing up. Most Miyazaki fans looked at it and went, what?
But I did enjoy in The Fablemans the emerging filmmaker, the little kid who sets up the train set.
The train set scenes were very nice. There's a lot of elements of The Fablemans I liked. It just did not I'd rather have seen him do a documentary about himself.
About himself,
Using old footage.
Yeah. About 5 years ago, West Side Story.
West Side Story.
Now, only a director such as he would attempt that.
And a beautifully done remake of the original, even bringing back some of the original cast.
Yeah.
Kind of got lost in the mix, though, because movie musicals just, unless it's a Disney animated film, they just don't seem to draw audiences right now.
Yeah.
We have moved on beyond My Fair Lady and Camelot and the great hits of the 60s, but we moved on when the new Hollywood started in 1969, and we've never gone back.
I have to praise him again for attempting to Color Purple.
Yes, Color Purple.
Which would seem to be out of his comfort zone.
Another film that has been so influential over time. Whoopi Goldberg was just talking about Color Purple the other day and referencing it to the history of LGBTQ representation in motion pictures. And it is probably more important for its LGBTQ influences and its history of black culture than it is for the
actual story.
And here
he is a white director.
And here he is a white director.
So what does that tell you? The guy's brilliant.
He's absolutely brilliant. Then you've got Lincoln full of great performances and monologues. And Daniel Day-Lewis is not an easy actor to work with.
Oh, no.
But Spielberg managed to pull a tremendous performance out of him in Lincoln.
That was about 14 years ago.
That was I believe, 2012.
Yeah.
Yeah, when Lincoln came out.
Yeah. And Daniel Day-Lewis, don't know whether he's coming back to us or not, is so brilliant. I agree with you. Perhaps a little bit like trying to corral Brando.
Yeah.
But Daniel Day-Lewis has so many more corners to
him. Daniel Day-Lewis apparently cannot be baited with money the way Brando could. Brando was brought into Superman with a dangle of $1 million. But Day-Lewis picks and chooses what he wants to do, and he's very, very picky. And he'll let years go by before he picks up another movie. But let's go back a little bit to the early stuff, because that's what everybody, really thinks of when they think of Spielberg. So first one, of course, was a movie called Duel. A lot of film aficionados have seen, general public may have seen on TV, about a killer semi-truck. Sounds a little bit like a Stephen King story.
It does.
But he made something out of it. And even at the age of 22, Hollywood realized, hey, there's something to this guy. Up to that point, he had been doing episodes of Night Gallery and little made-for-TV movies. But Duel proved that he could be trusted with a budget and make something really good. And then, of course, he does Jaws.
Right.
And the world changes and overnight.
You are so right. You know, I talk about the ones that people would know, like Schindler's List and so on. But when you say Jaws, everybody.
The first blockbuster. the movie that showed Hollywood a blockbuster was possible. That you could create a movie where the lines are around the theater waiting to get in, and all that anybody is talking about all summer long is this movie. That had never happened before. Never, not with North by Northwest, not with Casablanca, not with any of these movies. You had never seen that response from the public. And, of course, that opened the door for Star Wars a year later, which is Lucas was Spielberg's friend. They went to school together.
Yeah.
And the rest is history. And then you've got Close Encounters, which, and I love Close Encounters because we're talking about Spielberg's roots. The thing that gets overlooked is Spielberg's roots are not in science fiction. They're in the live-action Disney films of the 60s and 70s. Close Encounters owes more to Herbie the Love Bug and the Shaggy Dog than it does to H.G. Wells or Harlan Ellison. It was just Spielberg saying, these movies, these Disney films, these things with Dean Jones are good, but they were done on a cheap budget with a B-rate cast and no really good music. Let's put an A budget. Let's get a top cast. Let's bring in the best
Let's
composer.
Have Raiders of Lost Ark.
And let's remake some of these movies in our own way. And so they, these movies that nobody even watches anymore. No, when was the last time anybody watched The Shaggy Dog or Escape to Witch Mountain? But they're influencing Spielberg, so we're still seeing them because they're still influencing him.
Yeah, well, when you talk about Raiders of the Lost Ark, for instance, talk about another piece that's so brilliant, and you say, oh, my, you know, what can't this director do? And then,
Raiders was George Lucas's idea. Spielberg just filmed it, if you can use the word just in that sentence. But yeah, Spielberg gave life to Lucas's vision. On the beach in Maui, Lucas was hiding after the release of Star Wars and just bumped into Spielberg, who was preparing to make a movie. They sat down on the beach, and Lucas said, I've got this idea about this archaeologist, adventurer, and Spielberg, like, tell me more.
Oh, yeah, and can you imagine then that our director, who has now become so famous and is so nimble in any movie that he makes, that he comes out with something as transcendent as E.T.
E.T. is, again, going back to the kids. E.T. looking at the Shaggy Dog and saying, I can do that and I can make it better. And he did. And it hasn't aged particularly well. I saw it on the big screen a couple of months ago.
Did you? Yeah. What did you think?
It was really, really pleasant film. It's a great kids film. It's certainly been very, very influential. Without E.T., you would never have Goonies. You would never have Stand By Me. You would never have Stranger Things. Stranger Things has more to do with E.T. than it does with any of the other Spielberg films. But it also is so pleasant. It's so inoffensive that it's no longer relatable to current movies. If you were going to do an E.T. today, somebody would get shot at. Somebody would be a villain. And that movie avoids all that. So I'm very nostalgic about E.T., but I can't relate E.T. today to contemporary films.
And hence your points about Disclosure Day has villains.
Has villains.
And it even has some guns, and it has a much harder look.
It has a rougher, harder, more mature, more adult look.
Yeah.
I wish there was a little more of E.T. in Disclosure Day. I'd like to see something whimsical.
Yes.
There's no whimsy.
And that's
E.T. was full of whimsy.
A great adjective. It isn't as whimsical as the other. And I'm thinking just exactly why do I still feel Close Encounters is a better movie than Disclosure Day? Your whimsy.
Absolutely.
Is really.
Yeah, there was something whimsical about the red whoosh. And the score with When You Wish Upon a Star.
Oh, sure,
And the simple D-E-C-C-G that is played throughout. You know, all of that was just so uplifting. And you just felt warm and fuzzy coming out of the theater seeing Close Encounters. And you don't come out of Disclosure Day feeling warm and fuzzy.
And then he goes on to make Indiana Jones, which becomes, again, iconic.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can separate that out for the culture. And they don't care a hoot about anything we've said about his other movies. But just Indiana Jones lives for itself. And Harrison Ford has made a life out of this.
And they've continued it probably a little further than they should have. They could have stopped at Temple of Doom. Harrison was willing to do another.
Oh, no, they shouldn't.
The money
have.
Was certainly there. So we got Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. And then because everybody was still begging for another one, we got the most recent film. And we probably could live without those two, but we still will always have Raiders, as I think Bogart.
Well, you know, we'll always have two, Ken, and here's what makes him such an idol for all of us, is that he also makes Jurassic Park.
And
how
boy,
do you do
did,
that?
Did he go back to his roots for that
oh,
one?
Oh, my gosh.
Absolutely went back to his roots. I would argue that Jurassic Park is the last of the original style Spielberg movies, right, where you're just caught up in the adventure, and it's escapist fantasy. Mm-hmm. It's summer escapist fantasy. You're not called upon to play politics. You're not called upon to think too much. You can just sit in your seat, eat your popcorn, and have a terrific time with one of the great action movies of all time.
And without the help of AI, you've got CGI.
You have CGI.
That is really tremendous.
In its early years, and it still pulls it off.
Oh, my.
And that Williams score, oh, my gosh. What a wonderful
score. We have that in Disclosure Day, don't we?
We have Williams in Disclosure Day, and it was a bit of disappointment to me.
It's not as pronounced.
It's not. There's no thematic elements. There's no constant character themes running through that he was so well known for in his early film. When you're talking about his score for Star Wars, Darth Vader has his theme, Princess Leia his theme, Luke has his theme. You don't have this. But also, Williams is his 90s.
Yeah.
It's a miracle the man is still writing scores at all.
Right. And I don't think that Spielberg has put his film together, Disclosure Day, to take advantage of that thematic parts that you're talking about. It doesn't, for instance, on Emily Blunt. You just don't have her theme.
No, and I would say if there is one weakest point to Disclosure Day, it is the score.
All right, good.
The score could have elevated the movie
in
much the same way the score for E.T. elevated it. The score for Close Encounters elevated it. We don't have that sweeping, innocent, wonderful score full of strings and full of themes that we needed this movie to have.
All right, KG Klein, we've obviously gone farther than we usually go, and that's okay.
We don't get to do Spielberg very often.
Well, we don't, and for good reason. There's much more to set, but we can save this for another time. His film that he'll bring out in, what, about 2 or 3 years?
Well, hopefully in another 4 years, if everybody's still around
so
for it.
So, Ken, what do you recommend to our audience about Disclosure Day?
See it in a theater now while it's out. Find the biggest screen you can, the best sound system. Get to a Dolby Atmos if you can, because this is how Spielberg movies are meant to be seen. Jurassic Park will never look the same on a 60-inch screen as it did on an IMAX. And this movie is the same way. See it once on a big screen, and then it'll show up on TV from time to time, and we can reminisce.
Disclosure Day.